This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I recently had the pleasure of hearing the philosopher Galen Strawson talk about his new book, which is called Things That Bother Me. And he lists topics like death, the self, free will, narrativity. And while I think these are all interesting topics, I mostly just want to talk about the title and a little bit about what these topics are that he includes. See, the things that he includes under what bothers me isn't war, inequality, childhood cancer, right? I'm sure those things bother him, but in some sense they're not philosophical problems. They're not his problem, which in itself is interesting. What counts as a philosophical problem? What sets it off from the other kinds of problems that we have? See, if you're a theologian instead of a philosopher, and you believe in a just and an omnipotent God, then the problem of childhood cancer is a problem in theology, right? How does a just God allow the suffering of innocence? It's a big, big problem in theology. But philosophy basically looks at that question and says, well, that's only a problem if you believe in an omnipotent and just God. If we take him out of the equation, we don't believe that anymore, then childhood cancer's a big problem, but it's a problem for doctors, not philosophers. And in a sense, there's a whole tendency in contemporary philosophy to think that a lot of formally philosophical or theological problems could get untangled in a way that they would just become problems for science. And it's interesting what kinds of problems get left over. See, in general, it's been said there are three kinds of problems. They're the problems of mathematics and logic, which are problems within a predefined set of rules. And they may be very difficult, but they don't require anything to solve them that's not already given in their axioms. It may take people, you know, hundreds of years to solve Fermat's last theorem, but they didn't do it finally by discovering something new. They just played with the rules until a solution emerged. See, and the other kind of problem is the problem, empirical problems, the problems that are solved by discovering a reference to things out in the world. You know, the problem of cancer is that kind of problem. We need to do research and try to study it and figure out things to try. But then there's a third group of problems, which we deem philosophical problems, that involve our concepts, the concepts by which we organize our experience, that we never simply engage the world directly. We always have to organize our experience in some way or another in order to get any grasp on it at all. And those theoretical constructs of the very language itself in which we formulate them can get us entangled in different kinds of problems. So we sort of don't quite know where to look for the solution. And so problems like, what is the self? What do we mean by that? Can be that kind of problem. How do we talk about it? What does it mean to us? Now, I think it's an interesting sort of question for us to ask ourselves, is what sort of problem do we each have that we think sitting and looking at a wall would be an answer to? What kind of problem is that? And what kind of solution is that? Whenever new people come here, I usually ask them, what are you doing here? And I mean it in two distinct ways. One, I want to know what they're literally doing when they're sitting up here in the cushion. I mean, are you trying to count your breaths? Are you trying to quiet your mind? Are you trying to concentrate on a koan? What do you actually think the job description is, right? But the second question, what are you doing here, really is that bigger question of what kind of problem do you have that brings you to a place like this? And how are you formulating that problem in your own mind that you think doing something like this is relevant to it? Are you trying to protect yourself, perfect yourself? Are you trying to transform your mind or your character? Trying to escape a certain set of fears, anxieties? What is it that you think this does, right? You get a lot of different kinds of answers to that. In a certain sense, it's a fairly modern phenomenon that philosophers would ask a question about things that bother me. In the old days, philosophers asked the question, how should I live? A sort of different kind of question. And if you look at in antiquity at the examples of Socrates or Diogenes or Epicurus. These were individuals who would be marked out by their peers for living a certain way, not just for thinking or talking about things in a certain way. But that kind of question has dropped out of philosophy by and large. To the extent that philosophers talk about how should we live, it usually has more to do with how should we treat others, what are our ethical obligations. There's not a sense that the philosopher has found a new or different form of the good life. It's more or less presumed that the life of a liberal tenured academic is about as good as it gets, and so that question is more or less settled. Again, it's a question that's gotten, in this case, kicked over to religion, where how should I live becomes a core question in Buddhism, right? Buddha did say that we have some very confused ideas about the self and causality and interdependence, but he didn't suggest that thinking about those things differently would necessarily bring about an end of our suffering. His was much more a model of how should I live, and he prescribed a very particular way to live in a monastic community. And living that way for a long time would eventually, he suggested, have as its byproduct thinking about the self and others very differently. But changing your thinking wasn't primarily the goal. It was living differently, and living differently would cause you to suffer less and think differently. Now, we are, as lay people, coming together a few times a week to sit and practice someplace in the middle of these worlds. We're engaged in a regular practice, which is one way of living differently, to discipline yourself through a practice is itself transformative, right? To put aside the time to sit every day, to commit yourself to sesshins or long periods of practice. In a certain sense, this is analogous to undertaking any other kind of discipline, like, you know, deciding to take up the violin. You're sort of making a commitment to put in a certain kind of disciplined effort over a long time. And in the case of that, it's not just that in the end you'll be able to play the violin beautifully, but that you'll have become a certain kind of disciplined person. It's not just your playing that has changed, but something about your character is developed in the course of practice. And Zen says that as well, that it's not as if that there is this immediately discernible, invisible, audible product of all these years of practice, like a violin piece, but that the practice itself changes something about the person who does it. And that brings us back to that original question of what bothers you, or what are you suffering from? And what is it that this discipline will do to change that? It's a big question. How do you think about it?